Clinton's law and order approach led him early in his first term to sign legislation cutting funds for state resource centers that supplied lawyers to indigent prisoners. The result, according to Bob Herbert, writing in the New York Times, was that a man facing the death penalty in Georgia had to appear at a habeas corpus proceeding without a lawyer. In 1996, the president signed legislation that made it more difficult for judges to put prison systems under special masters to ensure the improvement of terrible prison conditions. He also approved a new statute withholding federal funds for legal services, where lawyers use those funds to handle class action suits. Such suits were important for challenging assaults on civil liberties. The Crime Bill of 1996, which both Republicans and Democrats in Congress voted for overwhelmingly, and which Clinton endorsed with enthusiasm, dealt with a problem of crime by emphasizing punishment, not prevention. It extended the death penalty to a whole range of criminal offenses and provided $8 billion for the building of new prisons. All this was to persuade voters that politicians were tough on crime. But as criminologist Todd Clear wrote in the New York Times about the new crime bill, harsher sentencing had added 1 million people to the prison population, giving the United States the highest rate of incarceration in the world. And yet, violent crime continued to increase. Why, Clear asked, do harsh penalties seem to have so little to do with crime? A crucial reason, he found, is that police and prisons have virtually no effect on the sources of criminal behavior. He pointed to those sources. About 70% of prisoners in New York State come from 8 neighborhoods in New York City. These neighborhoods suffer profound poverty, exclusion, marginalization, and despair. All these things nourish crime. Those holding political power, whether Clinton or his Republican predecessors, had something in common. They sought to keep their power by diverting the anger of citizens to groups without the resources to defend themselves. As H.L. Mencken, the acerbic social critic of the 1920s, put it, the whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary. Criminals were among these hobgoblins. Also, immigrants, people on welfare, and certain governments, Iraq, North Korea, Cuba. By turning attention to them, by inventing or exaggerating their dangers, the failures of the American system could be concealed. Immigrants were a convenient object of attack because, as non-voters, their interests could be safely ignored. It was easy for politicians to play upon the xenophobia that has erupted from time to time in American history, the anti-Irish prejudices of the mid-19th century, the continual violence against Chinese who've been brought in to work on the railroads, the hostility towards immigrants from Eastern and Southern Europe that led to the restrictive immigration laws of the 1920s. The reform spirit of the 60s had led to an easing of restrictions on immigration. But in the 90s, Democrats and Republicans alike played on the economic fears of working Americans. Jobs were being lost because corporations were firing employees to save money. That was called downsizing, or moving plants out of the country to more profitable situations. Immigrants, especially the large numbers coming over the southern border from Mexico, were blamed for taking jobs from citizens of the United States, for receiving government benefits, for causing higher taxes on American citizens. Both major political parties joined to pass legislation, which Clinton then signed, to remove welfare benefits, food stamps, payments to elderly and disabled people, from not only illegal but legal immigrants. By early 1997, letters were going out to close to 1 million legal immigrants who were poor, old, and disabled, warning them that their food stamps and cash payments would be cut off in a few months unless they became citizens. For perhaps 500,000 legal immigrants, passing the tests required for becoming a citizen was quite impossible. They could not read English, were sick or disabled, or were just too old to learn. An immigrant from Portugal living in Massachusetts told a reporter through an interpreter, "Every day we are afraid the letter will come. What will we do if we lose our checks? We will starve. Oh, my God, it will not be worth living." Illegal immigrants fleeing poverty in Mexico began to face harsher treatment in the early 90s. Thousands of border guards were added. A Reuters dispatch from Mexico City in 1997 said about the tougher policy, "Any crackdown against illegal immigration automatically angers Mexicans, millions of whom migrate, legally and illegally, across the 2,000-mile border to the United States in search of jobs each year." Hundreds of thousands of Central Americans who had fled death squads in Guatemala and El Salvador, while the United States was giving military aid to those governments, now faced deportation because they had never been deemed political refugees. To admit that these cases were political would have given the lie to U.S. claims at the time that those repressive regimes were improving their human rights record and therefore deserved to continue receiving military aid. In early 1996, Congress and the President joined to pass an Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, allowing deportation of any immigrant ever convicted of a crime, no matter how long ago or how serious. Lawful permanent residents who had married Americans and now had children were not exempt. The New York Times reported that hundreds of long-term legal residents have been arrested since the law passed. There was a certain irrationality to this new law, for it was passed in response to the blowing up of the federal building in Oklahoma City by Timothy McVeigh, who was native-born.